Hello and welcome back. And in this session, we're going to focus on communication and effective communication. We've talked about how our understanding of the world can be different than other people's and how the beliefs that we have affect our values and affect our behaviour. So how we communicate to other people can dramatically make a difference in terms of the message that people receive. And in fact, in NLP, we say that the meaning of your communication is the response that you get. So if you want to get the right response, then you need to be able to communicate in the right way. So this session is really aimed at just looking at communication in its kind of widest sense. So how would you define effective communication? I imagine that you'll be coming up with words like understand or transmit or give a message or from one person to the other, and there'll be lots of ideas that come out around the process that we use and around distractions and the problems that can be caused by poor communication or can make that communication less effective. I've read lots of definitions about communication, and lots of communication kind of research and theory comes from the sort of 1950s, where post office telephones were coming up with, we're doing a lot of research into communication. So GPO as they were then and BT as they are now. And a lot of their research was talking around things like transmission and receiver. So there's a transmitter, there's a message that's transmitted, and there's a receiver that receives it. And along the way, there's interference that stops that message getting across effectively. So it's that's a very kind of process-driven and a technology-driven definition of communication. So I like to define it as the transfer of information from one person to another to create mutual understanding. And the mutual understanding bit is the most important bit, really. It's so that we both get the same message. And in the language of an earlier session on this course, that we both see the same elephant. So I'd like to look at how our message is transmitted, if you like, if how we transfer that information from one person to another and what we're influenced by in terms of getting that message across. So if you're face to face with somebody, how do you transfer that information? How do you get your message across? So face to face, we communicate and we get our message across in three main ways. One is through the words that we use, but also the way that we say things. So the tone of voice that we use, the emphasis that we put on the communication, the way that we communicate can affect the outcome. And the final thing is the non-verbal part of that communication. We talk about body language, but when I talk about body language, I'm really thinking about all of that non-verbal communication. So things like facial expression, eye movements, nods, so the broader body language, but also even things like posture and the clothes that we're wearing and so on. So face-to-face, this is how we get our message across. So which of these three elements are we most influenced by as a receiver of that communication? Is it the words, the way, or the body language? And if we draw a pie chart here and we think about the percentages in terms of what we're influenced by, I imagine you could come up with a percentage for each one of those. And if you just spend a couple of seconds thinking about that, which are we most influenced by? Write a percentage down alongside each one, and it would be really good if it added up to 100%. So just very quickly think about a rough percentage. And there's been lots of research around which we're most influenced by. And, you know, there are different numbers depending on what research you look at. But essentially what we're saying here is that only about 7% of our message is in the words that we use. 38% is in the way that we say it. And 55% is in the body language. So you may be surprised at those numbers, or you may not. The reality is that we're very influenced by body language, and largely because we're influenced at an unconscious level. And if you think about it yourselves, if you go to a party or a networking event and you look around the room and you see various people standing around the room and they're talking, and you probably think, oh, that's somebody I'd like to go and have a chat with, or, you know, I'm not going anywhere near that person over there. So how have you made that decision? Because they haven't said anything yet. So yeah, of course, it's in the body language. And we're very influenced by that, because what we do is we look at the person across the room, we go back through all the people that we've met, this is all unconscious, to try and find a match. And if we find a match and we like the person who looks like this person we're looking at right now, then we will automatically like the person that we're looking at. If we find a match and we didn't like the other person, then we'll immediately not like the person that we're talking to right now. So the thing about body language is that it's largely unconscious. And there's all sorts of books been written about interpreting body language, because it's very important. And back in the 80s and 90s, there were lots of books written around body language. And I remember finding one in a car boot sale locally. And it was actually lying in a puddle at the car boot sale, which was probably the right place for it. Because when I picked it up and looked at it and opened it, one of the things I read was that if a five-year-old child puts their hand over their mouth when they're talking to you, they're lying, because they're trying to push the words back in. Or when an adult rubs their nose when they're talking to you, they're lying. And I remember talking to a group of people once about this, and they were saying that they have to interview as part of their role. And they said, yeah, we know this. So what do you mean we know this? So, well, we know that if we interview people and we ask them a question and they rub their nose, we know that they're lying. So the moral of this story is, whatever you do, if you're going for an interview and in the summer and you've got hay fever and you've got an itchy nose, don't rub it, because if people have read the books, then that's going to be problematic. The reality is that we can't interpret body language that effectively, because, you know, if you'd read any of those books, you'd probably see, you'd probably be able to tell me, you know, what does this mean in terms of body language? And you might be saying closed or defensive or switched off or not interested or backing away or aggressive. But why do people fold their arms? People fold their arms because they're cold. Because they're uncomfortable, because they've been sitting with their arms down by the sides for a bit, or there's no arms on the chair, or because they're being defensive. It could be any of those things. And the problem with interpreting it as being defensive is that that's going to affect the way you communicate with somebody, isn't it? If you think somebody's being closed or not interested in what you're saying, doesn't that make you feel less inclined to communicate? Probably. But the problem is that we interpret people's body language based on our own experience. So the first course that I ever ran, for instance, which was a train-the-trainer course, there was somebody at the back of the room who sat back in a chair, arms folded, legs outstretched, looking up at the ceiling, and for 2 days was saying, this is rubbish. Well, he didn't say rubbish, but I'm not going to say what he did say. And so I took that very personally. As an inexperienced trainer, I saw that as being an attack on me. So it's me that he doesn't like. And it probably wasn't. It may have been. But it was probably all sorts of things that were making him feel uncomfortable in that situation. The problem was that from then on, every time somebody in a classroom when I was running a course, every time somebody folded their arms and leaned back in the chair and looked up, I interpreted that as they don't like me. And because they didn't like me, I would either ignore them for the whole of the course or spend a lot of time talking to them and trying to build rapport and look after them and make sure they were okay. And either of those things is going to affect the way the course runs, isn't it? It certainly is for the rest of the group. So the important thing here to recognize about body language is, first of all, it does have an effect on the people you're talking to, a big effect, because people interpret your body language based on their own experience. The second thing to remember is that other people's body language has an effect on you. So the important thing here is to recognize the effect somebody else's body language has on you bring it into your awareness and decide what you're going to do about that. Check it out. And it's something that I use on courses. So if I think somebody looks bored on a course, I will say to them, am I boring you or are you bored? And they'll either say, no, I was just thinking about what you're saying. I'm really focused. Sorry. Or they'll say, yeah, I'm bored. Either of those things is helpful to me because at least I know then and I can calibrate their body language so that I know that when they do that in the future, I know whether they're being bored or not. And I'll usually throw it back to them and say, okay, so what do you need to do to stop being bored? And, you know, at least we know and we can have a conversation, we can deal with it then. So that's body language. Just be aware of the unconscious effect body language has on you, but also the effect you might have on other people. Watch for their reactions. So let's look at the way you speak. 38% of your total message, or the way that you influence other people. So do you ever find yourself when you're talking to somebody from another part of the country that your accent changes? It's a perfectly normal thing to happen, and it's not something that you need to stop doing. I mean, I can't do accents at all, but I've got a friend from Liverpool who, whenever I speak to him, I feel like I've got a Scouse accent within a few seconds of talking to him, until I hear him talk to one of his friends on the phone, and then I can't understand the word he says because his accent is so strong. And what's happening is that I'm changing my language to meet him. He's changing his language to meet me. And somewhere in the middle, we've got that understanding. Because the tone of voice can really change the way that people experience things. And if any of you have got a dog, if you've ever tried saying really horrible things to your dog in a really nice voice, you'll understand what I mean. If you haven't tried it, it's worth a try. You know, you can say, you're a horrible little dog, you are. You really annoy me. You cause me so much trouble. You really do. And watch the dog wagging its tail. Because dogs don't understand English. They understand tone of voice and they understand body language very well. So, for example, we've got a border collie and she sleeps in the kitchen. So I can go down to the kitchen in the morning and we can go in and make a cup of tea, make a full breakfast if we want to. And the dog will be lying in her basket with her tail just kind of going, you know, is it worth wagging this yet or not? And as long as you don't look at her, she'll stay in her bed. As soon as you give her eye contact, that's her signal for, right, time to get up. And she'll get out of bed and stretch. And that's like, right, the day's going there. But if you don't give her eye contact, that doesn't happen. Another example is, imagine that you're going into your team meeting at the end of the year and you go into the team meeting and you say, right, we've had a fantastic year this year. Sales are up, profits are up, and the order book's full already for next year. It's brilliant. Or you could go into that same meeting and say, well, we've had a fantastic year this year. Sales are up. Profits are up. The other book's full already for next year. Yeah, brilliant. Same message, same words, but do you get a different message from the body language and the tone of voice? Absolutely. Of course you do. And the thing about the written word as well is that that can be really problematic in itself, because if any of you read novels, you'll probably find that very quickly when you start reading a novel, your understanding, your memory of the words disappears really, really quickly. But have a look at this. Here's a phrase I'm just going to write on the whiteboard. And if you read that phrase and think about it for a second, what does it actually mean? What does it mean? The reality is it's got seven different meanings depending on what you say and how you say it. So in terms of how you say the word, that can dramatically change the meaning. So I didn't say you stole any money. it was someone else. I didn't say he stole any money. So you're lying. I didn't say he stole any money. I might have implied it, but I didn't actually say it. Or I didn't say he stole any money. I said someone did, but I didn't mention any names. I didn't say he stole any money. I said he borrowed it and he was going to put it back at some point in the future. Or I didn't say he stole any money, let alone the £20 you're talking about here. Or I didn't say he stole any money. I said he'd burgled your house and he'd had the TV and the car and the music center and all the rest of it, but I didn't mention any cash. So if you think that's a contrived statement, well, of course it is, to make a point. But think about the way people say good morning to you. I know people that can make good morning sound like a declaration of war. And you wait till they've had at least their second cup of coffee before you move on to anything else. Or think about the way people say yes, because yes can mean anything from yes to no. So you could say to somebody, do you understand that? And they say, yes. Or you could say, do you understand that? And they say, yes. And if you couple that with the body language, then 93% of the message is saying one thing and 7% is saying the other. What do we normally go with? Well, we normally go with the words because that's the message we want. That's the answer we want. Do you understand that? Yes, right, good enough for me. He said yes. Although we do know, at least at an unconscious level, that there's an incongruence, if you like, between the words and the body language. And if you're ever struggling to kind of make sense of what people are saying, then I would always recommend that you focus on the body language and the way rather than the words. If the two of them mismatch, you know, if they're saying something positive but the body language is saying something negative, then I would go with the body language rather than the words. Because words are problematic. As we just said before, that phrase that I put on the whiteboard, you probably read the words and subvocalized it. So said them to yourself in your head. And the tone of voice or the emphasis you put on that is what makes the difference to the overall meaning. Whereas when you read a novel, you tend to lose track of the words very quickly, as we said, and you know, you start to build pictures in your mind and understanding of what's going on around you. And that's one of the reasons that films of the book are quite often disappointing, because they're not the image of the people that you had in your mind. An interesting thing happened with the Harry Potter series, because I read the first book before I'd seen the film. And when I saw the film, it was like, it's kind of what I'd appreciated from looking at it, but not necessarily identically the same. But then when I read the second book, all of the characters in my head in the second book were the characters from the first film. So, you know, that was pretty clever from a marketing point of view. Because I imagine that most children, if they read the books, will have seen the film before they read the books. So they've already got the images of all of the characters and the scenery and stuff in their heads by the time they read the book. The thing with written word, like memos or emails or documents, is that we don't tend to do that the same way. What we tend to do with that sort of written word is sub-vocalize it, is read it to ourselves in our head. And so then the interpretation that we put on it is down to us and down to our experience and our map of the world, our understanding of the world. And this can be problematic, because how do we communicate mostly nowadays? Do you use email at all? The great thing about emails is that you can get a message, you can respond to it and send the message back, the reply, straight away. The worst thing about emails is that you can get a message, you can respond to it and send the reply back straight away. And if you've ever tried to kind of recover an email that's gone, then you'll understand where I'm coming from with this. It can be problematic. And also, you know, quite often you'll find yourself having an email conversation because people didn't understand the first email that you wrote and misinterpreted it. And then you're trying to recover that as you go through the day. And this is one of the reasons why people say, well, okay, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but you know, I don't have time to go and see people all the time. I have to email. Well, yes, okay, I understand the importance of email. And people say, well, you've got to have traceability and you need an audit trail and things. Yeah, totally accept that as well. The best way to communicate is face to face, because you've got the body language, the tone of voice, the words, you've got instant feedback. There's no delay between checking and understanding. The next best way is on the phone. And the worst way is email or written word. Because if these figures are true, when we're face to face, the 55, the 38 and the 7, what about on the phone? Are the numbers the same? You might think that the way that you speak is more important than the words, but the reality is than the body language. Sorry, but the reality is that what happens when we listen to a phone conversation is that we make the body language up. We invent the body language. We imagine what people are looking like and what their posture is like and what their movements are like. And if you've ever seen a picture of a DJ, then you'll know what I mean, because the chances are you've seen a picture of a DJ and thought, I didn't know he looked like that. Well, what did you think he looked like? You've obviously made some interpretation in your head of what they look like. And it's the same when you meet somebody face to face that you've only ever spoken to on the phone. How surprised, how often are you surprised when you see people and you say, oh, I didn't think you looked like that. You don't look like your voice sounds. And that's a very, very common thing because we make it up. So on the phone, we're inventing 55% of the message. When we're using email, we're inventing 93% of the message because we're inventing the tone of voice. We're inventing the words. And this is one of the problems with email. This is one of the reasons why people misinterpret emails. And I'm sure you've had lots of experience of that. And this is why emojis were invented, essentially, to kind of say, look, I'm being funny when I say this. It's a joke rather than don't take it seriously. You know, it's trying to get that message across more effectively. So one of the things that I think is really important in emails is how we introduce and how we talk to people. I sometimes get emails saying, you know, can we have the information by Friday? And it might say please or it might not. And I'll feel really bad about that. I'll feel really anxious and I'll feel quite annoyed. So I'll phone them up and say, look, you know, that email was a bit terse. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, it didn't say hello in it. And it's like, well, it's come into your inbox. So, you know, it's for you. Okay. And he didn't say goodbye. Well, again, it says at the top who it's from. You know, it's just we just need to get that information across. Yeah. And the information is important because the words are what you use to get your concept across in any communication. But the stuff that how you put those words down on the page or how you communicate those words to other people verbally is really, really important because there's more to life than the concept. So I'll always start an email with, it was good to see you on a course last week, assuming that you were on a course last week, because otherwise it wouldn't make sense. Well, what does that do? It was good to see you on a course last week. One of the key things it does, yeah, it does kind of make it human and it does make a connection and so on. But one of the things it does do in NLP terms is it anchors you to that experience. So if you were on the course last week and it was good, then when you read those words and you hear yourself say them, you take yourself back to being on that course last week. So you're in the same place in the same state. And the state is the important bit, because in the middle of a day, when you're getting hundreds of emails, I want you to read the email in a less stressful way. I want you to read my email in the right frame of mind to be able to take on board what it is that I'm saying. And by connecting you to an experience that we had last week, then that helps to get you into that frame of mind and that state of mind to be able to read the email effectively before you go back to the overwhelm and the stress and everything else that's going on. If I've never met you before, it would be a bit pointless to say it was good to see you last week because I didn't. But I will say something like, because I do a lot of my admin on a Monday, I would say something like, I hope you had a good weekend. Because I do. I genuinely hope everybody has a good weekend. And for most people, the weekend is better than the working week. Now, I might hit the time when somebody split up with their partner over the weekend or they crashed the car or whatever it may be. But the chances of that happening are a lot lower than them having a good weekend. So if I can connect you back to that weekend, then that's really good. Or, you know, I hope you had a good holiday because I knew you were on holiday last week. It's not stalking. It's just making a connection. And I think that makes a really, really big difference. So if effective communication is the transfer of information from one person to another to create mutual understanding, the way that we transmit that information can make a big difference to the mutual understanding. And we need to take into account the other person's map of the world. We need to step into their world, as we said before, and we'll talk about a process to help with that in a couple of sessions on. We need to use the language that people understand. We need to use the tone of voice that emphasizes the meaning of the message. And we need to make sure that our body language is congruent with all of those things. And people have talked to me about leadership before and what makes an effective leader. And I think the thing that makes an effective leader, makes people inspirational, is that their words, the way that they say them and their body language are congruent. So 100% of the message is saying the same thing. You're not getting a, yeah, we'll definitely do that, which I've seen from time to time. So be aware of your body language and the effect it has on other people, and be aware of the effect people's body language has on you. Be aware of the tone of voice that you use. And the words are important, and make sure that you speak the language that other people are using. And I'm not talking about whether it's French, Spanish, Italian, whatever. Use the jargon that people use. Use the words that people use to describe certain situations. It's often said that good communicators can get their message across to people at all sorts of levels within an organization. And that means we need to use different words to describe things to people. So there's an overview of effective communication. A lot of what we talk about in the next few sessions is about what the underpinning stuff behind that. So some of the beliefs, some of the values, and some tools, some techniques, some processes in particular that can be really helpful. So I look forward to seeing you on the next one.